This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to this Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is number 113. It is the 1st of November and it is just gone 6 p.m. in the UK. And I'm here with my two good colleagues, Alex De Groot at De Groot Media on Twitter and Henry Viola here at HT Viola. Some of you that are not looking and watching this podcast need to come over now onto YouTube because Henry is looking rather unusual. We'll speak about it later on, but he claims he's doing it for charity, but we're feeling for his good wife, Verity, at this very moment because it's not a good look, Henry. Tell us what you're doing and why you've got some growth on the upper lip, young man.
So, hello, Peter. Hello, Alex. Hello, audience. For those of you that are watching, you might notice I've started growing a mustache for November. And for those of you that aren't aware,
did you just say a dodgy mustache?
No, I did not, Peter. This is a refined RAF gentleman's mustache. 1930s actors. I won't hear anything against it.
I feel like I've got a salute, like I'm back in the RAF again.
Well, exactly. for those of you that don't know, November or the month of December, the charity encourages men to grow mustaches. And the whole idea is to get people talking about men's health. It's a month of the year where the idea is to try to get men to talk about their health a little bit more, because generally speaking, you know, as a gender, we are terrible at it. We're not comfortable reaching out and opening up about life's challenges. We think we're going to be burdening our friends. We're going to be burdening our families. We just don't do it until it's too late. And it's quite shocking, really, the consequences of that. On average, men actually die 4 years earlier than women. And 3 out of 4 suicides in this country are men. So for the sake of looking silly for 4 weeks, I am more than happy to have a little bit of fuzz on my face because it gives me the opportunity to say to people, actually, if you're going through a tough time or you think someone else is going through a tough time, stick your arm around them and have a chat. Go for a pint at the pub. Ask them what that is growing on their upper lip and where they found it. And could they put it back, please? But seriously, the first step in changing all of this is just looking out for each other and just having a chat. You know, life throws curveballs at all of us. And even when things seem tough, there's a lot we can do to look after ourselves and look out for each other. So for the month of November, I will be growing a mustache, and I would encourage everybody on the channel to reach out to their male friends, to their male colleagues, have a chat, ask them how they're doing. And if you all do that, then the mustache and the Peter's giggling will be well worth it. Thank you.
I applaud what you're doing and I applaud what you just said now. And you're absolutely spot on. I do a lot of work in the community up and down Leicestershire, mate, regarding mental health and individuals that suffer from it and are impacted by it. And it is staggering, the number of young people, young men between the age of 25 to 45, the highest rate of suicides, males, staggering. And the ignorance regarding their health and well-being and not going to get checkups and all the rest of it. It's astonishing. And we need to do more about it. So November is a really good month to actually raise awareness. So, I applaud that. Thank you very much for that, mate. Well done. And we will support you on that as well. So if you need to just share a link somewhere, we'll try and promote that for you as well. Or I'll add it to the website as well. Alex, what about you, fella? You're looking very dapper. You got good lighting today. I take it you survived half a change, well, mate.
For a change. Just for Henry, quickly, I mean, it's the 1st of November, so if you keep that up for 29 days, it's going to be a proper handlebar by the end of November, which I'm sure viewers and listeners will be tracking with glee and pleasure and excitement. So good on you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, in terms of me, so half term's over, kids back at school. That's good. Markets are challenging, let's be honest. Higher for longer with the interest rates. US Treasury yields at almost 5%. These are difficult market conditions for equity investors. And then if we focus back on the UK for a minute, we've had all sorts of news, but probably the biggest stock news we've had is the big profit warning from CAB Payments, CABP, which happened after we recorded the last Twin Peaks. And so for those that aren't aware, CAB Payments listed in July at a price of 335p. It was floated by the big boys. I think JP Morgan were on the ticket. It was going to be one of the biggest IPOs in London this year. And I'm afraid to say it's not even made it to the first fence because after 3 months, it's had a monster warning. And it's, I believe, today trading at around 60p, 6-0. So it's lost 85% of its value just 3 months. What do we make of all this? Well, quite frankly, anybody that tells you that they fully understand what CAB Payments does is probably a liar. But what is true is that they're exposed to some fairly racy end markets, what you might call emerging markets, and it looks as though the dynamics in those markets have evolved badly for the company, and they've had to pull down investor expectations for 2023 and also 2024. So brokers like Liberum and I think probably Peel Hunt, probably JP Morgan, pulling back forecasts significantly. And if you add that to the sort of shock factor of getting the warning, you've got the stock trading way off its IPO price. Doesn't do much for confidence in IPOs. And my mates in the city tell me this probably means London IPOs are sort of off the table till well into next year. This is a bit of a body blow. So hopefully, not many of our listeners dabbled in CAB, but I'm sure some did. And the payment space historically has been attractive to retail investors. But I've got to say, payments is really tough at the moment. Adyen's performed poorly. Worldline in France had a big profit warning. Visa was okay. Mastercard was okay. But they're the big boys. They're different. The smaller sort of startup payments companies having a difficult time. So that's probably the big company news that I've picked up on in the last fortnight. And I just wondered, did you guys what do you make of CAB Payments? Is it a stock you've looked at? What do you think of the fact that the shares are trading down 80% just 3 months after IPO?
I'm appalled by it. I mean, the fact that you can raise funds to list a business, you have to make certain assumptions about it. You have to declare certain information about the trading record and so on. And when you're buying an IPO, you are relying on that information to be accurate, not just historically, but forward-looking as well. And for the wheels to come off the bus so badly within just weeks of the listing, it not just raises questions to me about the credibility of CAB Payments itself, but also about the brokers that were floating the business. I mean, who was advertising this thing? What due diligence were they doing? To me, whatever they were doing, it wasn't good enough. It's not stood up to the test of time. That's a very dangerous place to be for investors, to be honest. You need to be able to rely on the information you're given as an investor. So not good for the UK.
Yeah, Pete, any thoughts?
I'm exactly the same, mate. My concern has always been regarding authenticity and integrity of the markets, that we don't lose any investors because they come onto the market with a hope and a prayer. And if they do a bit of research and a lot of research and a lot of due diligence, some of them will come out of investing after 5, 10, 15 years with generally quite good returns. You don't want to go into the market on the first occasion or in the first year and invest in some of the stocks that have been hampered or hindered by poor management or fluffy sort of numbers and get hit hard. And if somebody was unfortunate enough to have made CAB Payments one of their first investments this year, I suspect that they'll won't come back to the market. They will leave the market, and that'll be one less person who, over the long term, could make better returns than having their inflation reduced savings impacted, you know, because they can actually beat inflation by investing long term in the markets. And that's my concern, really, Alex, that, you know, it was one of the big, was it the biggest one we've had this year? I don't, yeah. So,
yeah.
You know, when that happens then, and it's all the fanfare of this is our biggest one this year, and then it gets clobbered by this amount this quickly, it's just very concerning. And as you've just said, it then puts a freeze on whatever else is going to IPO. They go, we're staying away from the market. London Stock Exchange really needs it. The FTSE needs it. AIM certainly needs it. And it puts off other companies coming here for whatever reason, because it's been tainted, or I don't know, it forces other people to have a negative view of our markets, and we don't need that.
I mean, one of the things I would flag is that this was what you call a private equity IPO, where the seller of the shares was a PE fund called Helios, and they sold down, I believe, 30% at the IPO. The company didn't raise any money for itself. This was the PE fund selling their shares, so what you would call old money. That means that Helios are still the biggest shareholder, but they have greatly reduced their shareholding. But there is a feeling in the market that you have to be extra careful with these private equity floats, because at the end of the day, who knows the company better than its private equity shareholder? You know, private equity firms place big bets, you know, big, big bets. And they have a better insight into the dynamics of the market than any retail investor, than any institutional investor, than any investment bank. They don't make many mistakes, because their bets are a lot bigger than most fund managers' bets. Helios timed it very well. I mean, you could make the point that they've still got their shareholding down at 60p, so it's not all good news, but they've taken 300 million quid off the table at IPO. And so I think investors will be cynical going forward about private equity floats in London until we get a track record of some of them performing well and leaving something on the table for other investors. So that's probably one takeaway, one lesson going forward. Is it worth having a punt on cab payments now at these levels? I mean, it's a pure gamble, because I think it's fair to say we're back to square one in terms of what the company does, you know, how credible their forecasts are. But yes, you probably will get some people trying to either average in at this very low price or just having a punt on the basis that it's oversold. And I wouldn't put anybody off, but do be aware it's a relatively high risk punt, because this is not a business model that anybody can really claim to fully understand. And unless you're really very close to emerging market currencies, specifically the Nigerian Naira, you know, you are at risk. So it's been the big company news for the last 2 or 3 weeks. The FT's written lots of stories about it, but I think it will rumble on, because we've not had that many IPOs this year. And this was an £800 million company at IPO, which is now capitalized at about 120. It's a long way back. So I guess that's been my main takeaway from what's happened in markets since we last spoke, cab payments.
Cool. Okie dokie. I'm just going to go back, if I may, and just give a quick overview of the markets, where they've been since the past 2 weeks. We've been talking quite for some time now about support levels of the FTSE and also AIM. And we've breached the support levels. And that's
say, quite what concerning. Support levels?
well, yeah, they keep just going lower and lower. We've had, and I stated this some time ago, the support level for the FTSE 100 was around 7,380, that sort of level. We've ebbed and flowed and bounced off there, below it, down, and gone back up again. But today, yesterday, we closed at 7,321. Today, we had an intraday low of 7,302. And we ended up closing plus 20 points at 7,342. We need to be getting back up above 7,500, because any other further bad news is going to take us down to 7,002. And at 7,002, we then hit a rocky period, and November's, you know, sometimes can be quite a good month. You know, October's invariably been a negative month, historically has been a negative month. November tends to be a stronger month than than October, but we will see. We want to get above 7,500 for that, for the FTSE 100, with some positive news. We don't want to go any lower. FTSE All Share remains below the magic 4,000 figure. We're sitting at 3,967. We're just plus 13 points today. FTSE AIM, well, hit a three-year low of, I think it was, yeah, 669 on the 26th of October as a three-year low, guys. And today it's sitting at 683 plus 3 points. So we need that to be ebbing up above 700. Otherwise, we are going to hit that 650. We need some good news for the AIM market, because things aren't going well in that space. I'm not sure what the catalyst is going to be, because we've seen so many companies saying that they're delisting on the FTSE, moving markets away from London and delisting from AIM. Alex, thoughts? What can we do?
Well, a great piece of research came out this week, guys, which I've shared on Twitter, which is freely available from their website, from a city firm called Allenby, which I'm sure a lot of the listeners will know. And Allenby have basically calculated that we're down to about 778 companies on AIM. Start of the year, it was about 820, I think. So we've lost about 50, and we've gained about 10. So net-net, we're down about 40. So number of AIM companies has shrunk, continues to shrink. I mean, you flagged yesterday, I think, Pete, the approach for Sofion, massive premium being offered there, potentially. I mean, that's the thing. One of the things in the Allenby report is that the premium being paid on bids is as high as 60%, 6-0. So one strategy for investors might be to do a scan of AIM, tech, healthcare, basically anything bar oil or resources. And I mean, do a bit of homework, because some of the stuff on AIM, as we all know, is a bit dicey, but there's still a lot of good companies on AIM. And just plug in 60% to the current valuation, see where it gets you, because that is the calculated premium on AIM bids this year, 2023. So back in the day, most investment bankers would tell you that standard premium would be like 30%. So share price is £1, you get £1.30. But the premiums are coming in much higher than that in 2023. And there are a lot of corporates out there with money, with firepower, and private equity still has firepower. So there's a lot of deals going on. I don't see an end to this, guys. I see takeovers continuing well into 2024. And as far as investors are concerned, I think you need to just really have that as one of your key criteria when you're picking stocks. Is this company attractive? Does it have a moat? Could it get taken out? If it's going to get taken out, who's going to take it out? And then plug in a premium. I mean, to me, that's as good a strategy as you're going to find in the current market. Certainly anything tech or healthcare based is looking very attractive to a takeout. And I saw today that Equals has effectively announced a strategic review, which basically says, come and get us. So you get into the stage now where company boards are thinking, well, he's gone, why don't we go? You know, we want off as well, because we can get a new incentive plan and we can reward our shareholders. So I feel that M&A is going to be an ongoing story, guys, for the rest of this year and into next year. And, you know, do you agree? And if so, how do you go about deciding what are the best takeover stocks?
I completely agree with you, Alex. I think it's doing the hard work. It's this thing about everybody wants to eat, but nobody wants to hunt. They've got to go out there and do the hard work. You've got to work out, if it's all possible, the profitable companies on the FTSE and on AIM, right? And try and work out what is its sum of parts, yeah? What is its intrinsic value? And if you can find any stock currently in the marketplace whereby if you look at all the sum of parts and it's worth £200 million, and it's not indebted to the yin yang, right? And currently, the market is actually saying, oh, we only value this at 80 million. Yeah, only value this at 100 million. Then you've probably got an upside of 100%. Yes, the private equity companies, which invariably it tends to be these days, are not going to want to always give you that full price for that company. So even if they go 50% above where you've bought it as a new buyer, not averaging down, but as a new buyer, you're likely to get another 60% pop, as you've said, on that particular stock. And we've seen so many of these companies which have gone down, 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 and down, suddenly get an absolute humongous premium. And the one that I'm going to talk about regarding such a premium, I was like, what? What are you talking about? Was one that got absolutely ramped to the end of the world from 2018, 19, 20, 21. It was held by some fund managers and the fund manager and was promoted and ramped by numerous people. Was Fire Angel. Did you see the premium on that one? I think on the 26th, it was sitting at 2.5 pence, and the bid came out at 7.4 pence, but it got ramped from 50 pence all the way down to 10 pence from 2019, 2018 to 10 pence in 2010. And then it got ignored. No one was talking about it anymore. It hit 2 pence, 2.1 pence ish last month in October. Sorry. Yeah, October. And then 31st, yesterday, was it yesterday? I think it was. I'm losing track of the days, guys. Apologies. It then gets an offer at 200 odd percent premium to 2.5 pence at 7.4. Now, unless you bought it recently, this is an alarm. This is a fire alarm company. No one knows about it. So, fire safety company, should I say, fire detector. And everybody who's held that stock long term has come out of that stock despite the 200% premium with third degree fire burns.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing Podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
I mean, what do you do?
What can you do? I mean, I looked at that business because it shot obviously to the top of the high rises on the day. Not a business I know anything about. I went and looked at it. I don't know why anyone's bought that. Looks absolutely worthless to me. I mean, it's put aside the share price movement, but I would hazard a guess that the market agrees with me here. If it's fallen from 50p to 2p, it's not as though people really wanted this thing. And then somebody's come out of the blue and bought it. I'd never, ever, ever have guessed that that would be a takeover target. Tiny little business that doesn't really do. I mean, fire safety? Really? Is it that innovative?
It isn't. It was innovative. They'd had contracts. They had basically Scotland to themselves for a little while because of regulations they put out there. But they've fluffed and dropped the ball so many times. Now they're competing across the country and globally against the likes of Chubb. Now you've got Chubb, which is the multi-billion pound company. Yeah, it's like the corner shop going against Amazon. Yeah, when you look at Fire Angel, but they didn't execute. They had Scotland to themselves. They could have made some money. Da, 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 da. And they just didn't use the technology properly. Didn't execute properly. Didn't have the right batteries in the within the fire detection systems and all the rest of it. And now this other entities are called intelligent something or other are looking to actually intelligent safety electronics are looking to take that tech and make good with it over the long term, I think. And they're getting it for peanuts, absolute
I mean,
peanuts.
that's a similar story to Smoove or ULS Tech as it used to be. That was when I originally invested in that. That was a very different business. Then they went on this sort of investment drive, raised a load of cash, started trying to develop a platform to ease the house purchase and the house transfer market. Burned through cash year after year, cancelled the dividend. It was all looking really rather ropey. And then somebody swooped in and gone, actually, yeah, the tech's quite good. We'll have that. And bought it for a fraction of what it was once valued at.
Absolutely. I mean, Alex mentioned earlier Sofion, didn't you, Alex? And that was used to be a another tech darling, and the share price went from what was it, a tenner over the last 5 years, all the way down to I think four odd quid. And then what was the premium on that yesterday? 104% premium, I think you were saying. So 490 yesterday on the 30th. And then yesterday a bid comes out at a tenner. I was like, whoa. And I love my tech. So I was a little bit dismayed that I'd not looked at that one, to be fair. And we're buying it short term. But for that, exactly what you said, a takeover or a bid or them actually getting, sorting themselves out over the next 2 years. So 104% premium. from what, Bidco, which is a subsidiary of Wellsprings Worldwide. So that's a takeout and a half. But some people are probably, I've had it for the last 2 years, are going back to break even if they're lucky.
I think if you put yourselves in the shoes of a small cap fund manager, they are probably getting quite serious redemptions at the moment, i.e., can we have our money back? Can we sell our units? So when they get one of these offers coming in, it's happy days because it gives them the cash that they need for the redemptions. Now, there is a lag between the bid happening and the cash coming in, but it does sort of fulfill a need. The question for the investors on our podcast or the likes of ourselves, what do we do? You know, if we get a tasty bid, do we reinvest the money back in the market or do we take it out? I mean, I can see a lot of people basically getting some nice checks coming their way and thinking to themselves, well, what's the next takeout candidate? What's the next bid story? Because once you've been a beneficiary of this trend, you want to play it again, play up your money. The fund managers don't have that luxury generally because they've got to meet the redemptions because the redemptions are ongoing. But it is different for the PIs. Although obviously CGT can be an issue to think about. But I see M&A continuing well into next year. There was another one that I keep tabs on, a company called Ascential, ASC.L. It's a sort of what you call a mid cap, really. And that was always going to be a breakup story. And earlier this week, they announced that they'd sold their digital commerce division to a big US agency group called Omnicom. And the price being paid was something like 780 million quid. So the Ascential share price went up 25% on the day because they're going to give back the shareholders a lot of the proceeds from this breakup, from this disposal program. So bids are coming in at good levels. I mean, you don't often see this. So I would encourage people watching our pod to really screen the UK market for unloved tech, unloved healthcare. It doesn't matter if it's had a small warning, as long as it's not going to go bust, you know, plug a nice premium onto that share price, and you'd be surprised if something doesn't happen over the next 3 to 6 months. Because I don't see this trend changing. The only people that are busy in the city right now are people that work in M&A.
You've mentioned Ascential there, and you've done a wheelie because I wasn't going to mention it on the show. I actually purchased that in August and September at sub 2 quid, and I wasn't going to talk about it until it hit 3 quid. The view for me was again the intrinsic value and the sum of parts. For me, they were going to get this deal done at some point. There was loads of mergers and acquisitions going on within their space. They're going to keep the events business, which is very lucrative for them. The likelihood is that that 1.2 billion that they're going to get for two parts of their business is going to leave the cash cow, which is the events business, and they're going to give back about £1.50 per share if the shareholders are lucky. So eventually, I'm going to end up, irrespective of what the share price is at the time when they announce the return of £1.50, I'm going to end up with about £3 worth of shares. Plus, then still have the retention of the events business, which they'll probably rebrand and rename. So I did my homework on that. I watched it and tracked it. They kept saying, "Oh, we're going to get this deal done." It delayed, delayed. Lots of noise about it. It was they'd earmarked it, so it was out there across media. We're going to sell these two parts of our business, and I thought, okay, I can wait a year. Yeah, so I bought it, you know, in August and September with a view that this is going to happen between now and next August, September. And now it's happened in October. I suspect that there's other bits and pieces, smaller parts of the business that they're going to get rid of, and they're going to end up only with the events business. So there's more to come on that front, I think. And they may also get another person that comes in and wants to bid for that, the two parts of the business that they're trying to sell. So I'm quite pleased with it right now, and I'm also pleased the fact that I said diddly squat to anybody about it. Didn't need to ramp it and promote it to anybody that's following me to say, I think this is so and so, you should buy it too. Didn't do any of that. So I'm rather pleased with that particular one. On the other front, what I'm not so pleased about is a stock which today I've had to go, hands up, I'm done. I made a mistake. I call this wrong. And that was a stock that I bought last year. And also for the Proactive Investors Competition, which I'm competing against professionals with on some fund managers. I think I've currently got the wooden spoon in that competition. I must be ranked last in this particular competition this year. But I had purchased it for myself and I thought, you know what, let me back myself here in this competition. And the stock was Spirent. I bought it at £2.43 back in March of 2022. So £2.43 opened the year. I'd only just gone, right, okay, that's my stock of the year, Spirent, right, in Proactive. I think it was probably the first stock that I had of the year that came out with some news. Might have been the 6th or 7th of January. That's how quick it was. Bang, first profit warning. And since then, I think they've had three or four profit warnings. I've lost count. I'm just like, every time the name comes out, I'm like, anyway, the shares are now 90 odd pence, up and down, ebbing and flowing. I've gone, 5G, telecoms. Telecoms have been absolutely brutal this year, been spanked left, right, and centre. Do I want to wait another year for them to try and sort themselves out? Is there a possibility of, you talked about the premiums now, Alex. Is there a possibility of a takeover? 50% premium, will that help me? No. Will 100% premium help me? No. Essentially, I'm down 60% today when I sold it, right? Sold it at 95.5 pence per share. At 60% down, I needed a premium or a takeover, a catalyst to boost the share price by 150% or more just to get back to break even. So I've taken the hit, taken the loss, and I've moved on. And when this podcast comes out, I'll add this podcast to the link to say this is why, and the explainer as to why I've sold it. But I just couldn't take I couldn't take the pain anymore because it was about the management not executing. And I think this is a very important bit. We've all got to go back and look at our losers in our portfolios because we've all got them. Some people don't want to admit it, but I'll always admit it. Henry will always admit it, and so will Alex, and so will Wheelie, and he always did do. Go into your portfolio and have a look at the ones that are sitting there, minus 50%, and really, really dig deep and look at the reasons why you should keep them, because some of them are going to go to being more than 50%, 60%, 70%, until you're getting absolute crumbs from that last chunk of money you put in, and admit that you're wrong and sell them. And that's what I keep doing. I just keep going in and I'm going, now, you're the fool here. Get out, move on. And I'm not saying that everyone should do that. And some of these stocks will turn around and you have to do your own research, but make up your mind because at some point or other, these stocks will get taken over, but some of them will die in the dust.
Just to pick up on a stock that I talked about a couple of episodes ago, guys, Strix Group, a little bit of news in the last week or so, which probably the listeners need to be aware of if they haven't seen it already. So Strix Group or Ketel, KETL, is the ticker. Got battered about 2 months ago, and I name checked it on the pod a couple of weeks ago as a potential turnaround story or recovery play. I just wanted to flag that in the last week or so, the company has announced that A, the former CFO is standing down with immediate effect, a lady called Rowdra Wong, and B, that their banks have agreed to temporarily ease their banking covenants because there was some fear that the company might break through their banking covenants because trading is a little bit weaker than they had hoped for and debt levels are reasonably high. So the banks have said that's okay. And generally, what that means is that the banks have had a look at the books and they're fine that up to a point the company is, you know, trading's tough, but they're not going to bust through their covenants too badly. So they're going to give them a little bit of the benefit of maybe cutting the ratio on the covenant by a quarter from about 2.25 to 2.5 times. They've also flagged the company that they will pay a dividend in December, 0.9p. I mention all this because basically I think all of these announcements by Strix are good for the story, and investors should see them as good for confidence. They wouldn't be allowed to pay a dividend unless the banks signed it off, and the banks wouldn't have loosened the covenants unless they'd been assured that trading was broadly going in the right direction. And the old CFO may be good, may be bad, but at the end of the day, she's moved on, and the replacement will probably be as good, if not better. So Strix is a story we talked about on a previous episode, and I just wanted to revisit it briefly this evening. And we're talking about stocks that might get taken over. You know, this is basically one of the world's top kettle manufacturers, or kettle control manufacturers. They've also branched out into water filtration products, based in the Isle of Man and China. You know, shit hot engineering company, priced as though it was going bust. It isn't going bust. They've just had a bit of a tricky time trading wise, but they won't mess around. If things don't pick up, they will go private. The management are too clever, too cute to doss around with a share price of 50-odd p. So I just wanted to flag that news on the trading and the dividend, because it might have been lost, but it's quite important for that story. So I stand by Strix as a decent turnaround play.
No, I agree. I think when we discussed it last time, I said to you that I've kept an eye. I'm going to be keeping an eye on it, which is what I've done. So I've been monitoring their progress, and the stock has been in quite a tight trading range since that last profit warning. So I'm watching for that breakout and some other news regarding catalysts, or as we should say, a switch in momentum. There's a joke there somewhere. Henry, which stocks have you got, mate, and where are you going to start? Is it a shaving firm? Are you going to talk about Gillette
No.
or anything like that?
No. you put me off now. It's following on from Alex's theme of interesting UK companies that have had car crash updates. This is a UK-based company which operates as a property portal, providing resale and lettings property advertising services. It is Rightmove. The ticker is RMV. And the shares recently fell off a cliff after the US firm CoStar decided to buy not Rightmove, but one of their rivals on the market. And the market decided, oh dear, the Americans are coming, they're going to take our lunch money, we'd better ditch Rightmove quick because they won't be able to stand up to the competition. Now, for those of you that don't know Rightmove particularly well, it's the UK's number one online digital property advertising portal. It's got the largest selection of properties and the largest and most engaged property audience of any property portal in the UK. And this gives it a fantastic network effect. The investment is all about this idea that the more properties you've got on there, the more people want to buy through it. And the more people buy through it, the more people want to list their properties there. You get this sort of virtuous cycle. Think of social media, for example. Now, historically, it's been an insanely high quality business. It's had 300% returns on capital and a 70% operating margin. Now, I defy you to find a business with metrics like that in other sectors. It's on net cash of £35 million. It's been buying back shares at a compound annual rate of 2% a year. And for our audience, at the time of recording, it is available for just £4.67 a share, which is near 5-year lows, despite the fact that revenue has compounded at a growth rate of 6.5% and earnings per share have grown at 8.5% over that time period. So to me, this looks like a super high quality UK business available for an absolute steal. Now, it's not to say the Americans aren't going to take our lunch money, but that's the risk you take with investing. Do you back the UK or do you back the Americans? I think Rightmove could be an interesting play for people to go and do some research on.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Great. What are your thoughts, Alex?
Well, I know the business well, and what I can say is that historically, whenever people have said Google's going to get Rightmove, they're wrong. Whenever they've said Facebook's going to get Rightmove, they're wrong. It floated in 2006. I was there, and it's made people shed loads of money. But Henry's right. Just recently, it's been treading water or worse. And there probably is a little bit of negative sentiment around CoStar. And there's been a lot of negative news stories about UK housing markets. So it has been a bit soggy recently, but it's an absolutely blinding business. It's one of the few online businesses that doesn't need to do any search engine optimization or SEM, SEO, SEM, because we all just sit there typing Rightmove into our browser. The only other company I can think of is Autotrader.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, apart from that, they're all dependent upon Google for traffic. Rightmove are not dependent on Google for traffic. So I'm in Henry's camp. I would use weakness in the Rightmove share price as an opportunity to buy. It's a proven business model. I think the agents need it. They can't do without it, can they? And those margins are just unbelievable. I agree with that. I think opportunistically, with the shares being a bit unloved right now, worth revisiting. I think there was actually a decent piece of data on the housing market today about house prices, somewhat surprisingly. I'm on side with that idea. High quality company.
I completely agree with both your sentiments, and a good call bringing that one to our attention is again, Henry. It's a high class company. It's done really, really well. I think for me, one of the things that's causing the lag additional to CoStar is the fact that of the sentiment towards the housing market at the moment, not as many houses going onto the market for sale. The ones that are on sale are trying to reduce their prices for people to actually, move across the Rubicon to actually buy the next house. Interest rates are high, as we've all spoken about, could stay higher for longer. So the share price could, and the sentiment could stay negative. But once that sentiment changes, off we go again. We've been here before where we've been scared of Amazon coming in or Facebook coming in or, Microsoft coming in to do this, that and the other. Regarding one of our, we call them behemoths, but one of our larger blue chip entities being taken to task or their share of the market being eroded by a US predator. And it doesn't always happen. So I think you're spot on here, Henry and Alex, that this could be an opportunity at some stage to buy into Rightmove. And for those that are super cautious and want to start, it might be a case of scaling in to buy on a monthly basis, a certain amount until you get to the size that you want. And over the next three to maybe 12 months, you've got a nice little wedge of Rightmove at a reasonable price. Other than waiting for interest rates to drop, and markets to say that house prices aren't falling in the longer, this would be a stock that I would buy. You know, if the markets weren't as bad as they are right now, I'd probably be going, Henry, thanks for that. I'll nip in tomorrow and get it before the podcast goes live on Friday. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's a very good stock. We haven't got many of these sort of companies which has this level of market share. Yeah, and I think you've touched on it maybe before, Alex. It's one of them that's gone, no, we don't need to go to America. We're just going to stay here and just hone our skills here and generate revenue here. We don't need to go abroad. I've got a lot of love for Rightmove. Good call, brilliant call.
They've never deviated from that. They've never done the US. They've never done France. They've focused on the UK. They've been adamant that there is enough revenue from UK agents and property developers through the cycle to make good money. And the other thing is, fellas, you know, this is largely subscription revenue, so it's quite high quality. You know,
sticky.
They're on a promise from their clients. They get paid every month, direct debit. it's advertising, but not in the usual sense of advertising, because the agents just can't do without it. There can't be many agents in the UK that don't have Rightmove. You know, they can probably kick Zoopla into touch. I don't know about on the market, frankly. That always feels to me a bit like a sort of number three, number four player. But you find me an agent that doesn't use Rightmove. They may not like being given expensive packages, but it gets them all their search inquiries.
To be honest with you, I'd be firing my agent. If I was trying to sell a property and they told me they weren't on Rightmove, I'd be going, well, what am I paying you for, to be honest?
Yes, you would, Henry. Even without the tash, you would do that. I think it's a really good point you've made there, because there's all this talk about on the market and Zoopla coming and eating Rightmove's lunch, and they did absolutely diddly squat, didn't they? You know, so
Well, the
yeah,
other
good
classic
call.
example of it is the healthcare sector in America. Berkshire Hathaway, JP Morgan, and Amazon club, I think it was Amazon, club together to try to reduce the cost to the American consumer of healthcare. They spent tens of billions of dollars, 5 years of time, hundreds of people, and eventually threw the towel in. Couldn't make it work. They got nowhere. You know, just because you're big and just because you had success somewhere else doesn't mean it's a foregone conclusion.
Absolutely, it's absolutely spot on. I'm just going to take a break here, gents. I'm going to bring you up to speed with the Memphis charity raise that we're doing. For those of you that have kindly donated, thank you ever so much. For those of you that haven't yet, please pay us a visit at www.justgiving.com/fundraising Twin Peaks Challenge 2-3. We're sitting here with 55 supporters, excluding myself and Henry. That's 53 out of 3,000 plus investors and listeners that we have each fortnight. So please, can you try and make a donation pre-Christmas? Enhance your luck for 2024 by giving a bit of charity to somebody else. We're sitting at the moment at 2,585 pounds raised so far. We've had a really significant donation from, I know, I think it's a chap, and his handle is Eclectic, sorry, Eclectic Trends. And he's just the words that he's put here is something to help you reach your target. And he's donated £125 and £31 and 25 pence gift aid. And we had an anonymous donation as well. So I really want to thank those two individuals for helping us towards our goals of raising some money for disabled children in Leicestershire. And if you haven't made a donation, please consider doing so. And support us for giving you these podcasts. Thank you very much. Alex, I want to talk about a company I think you know about here now. Global Data, ticker symbol DATA, another tech company. And this company is, it intrigues me. I keep looking at it and looking at it and thinking, I see all these other tech companies being taken over. And essentially, it's the it classes. I'll give you the description here. Leading data, insights, and analytics platform for the world's largest industries. Our mission is to help our clients decode the future, make better decisions, and reach more customers. Being the go-to intelligence provider for leading IT telecoms vendors, service providers, and channel providers. And they've got this one platform model, which essentially is the foundation for their business is a result of years of continuous investment. They spent loads of in R&D, targeted acquisitions and organic growth. It's sitting here at the minute. It's an, I'll get this right. I think it's an it is an AIM stock, as one of the largest AIM stocks at 1.26 billion, right? Price range 132 to 202, and it's currently sitting at 151. Really high PE, I think, for a UK tech company that's sitting on its lows or near its lows of 32.3 PE, divvy yield of 2.64. But I keep going back and I looked at the half year results back in June and they were smashing it, outperforming across all metrics. Statutory profits were up 59%. The only sticky bit for me, and Henry was going to be rubbing his tash going, yes, Pete, tell me about it. The debt was 230 million at the time in June. They'd got themselves a little bit of cash to give them breathing space and a debt facility back in August 2022, of 410 million of debt refinancing. So they don't have to do anything until about August 2025. So I'm sitting here thinking, is that another company that's going to get taken over? Is that a company that can transition and get through what are it almost recessionary factors that we're trying to fight through over the next 3 to 6 months to it to a year? But though I can't I keep looking at that June half year and thinking it keeps drifting down after those numbers. If they come out with a trading update in July, which is what, sorry, in January when the next one's due, and say we're doing okay, I think this particular stock could pop. But it's completely overlooked at the moment. No one talks about it on Twitter, which is what I love. But I don't know. Something's not quite right there. And maybe it's a debt, maybe it's a factor in the telecom space and data analytics space, which at the moment everyone's going, whoa, everything's being delayed. You know, the contracts are slowing down, the pipeline's slowing down. And a bit like Spirent, everyone's a little bit like, we're gonna wait, we're gonna hold off until 2024. Any thoughts? Have you looked at it before, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, this is Mike Danson's company, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is.
Mike, 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 Mike's the fellow that bought Wigan Football Club, who got themselves into a right old mess. So Mike's a serial entrepreneur, as I think we all know, and he made a shed load out of a company called Data Monitor.
Data Monitor.
That
He was only
15 years
29,
ago.
mate. He's 29 years of age when he started that.
Yeah, I mean, he's a shrewd cookie. And basically, Global Data is Data Monitor Mark II, without doing it a disservice. And what's changed is that we've now got the cloud, and we're now all a lot more comfortable manipulating data. And so, if you're an organization and you need research and strategy and data on your industry, telecoms, hospitality, you name it, Global Data will be your vendor of choice. But you are right. I mean, some of the sectors they're exposed to probably are a bit tough at the moment. That may be impacting the pipeline. It may be impacting some of the budgets into next year. But the old expression, data is the new oil. I mean, I believe in that. And Mike knows that more than anybody. So he will take the long view. He's the biggest shareholder here. And if it's good enough for him, it's good enough for me. So if the shares are trading sort of towards the bottom end of the range, I'd have a look, a bit like the Rightmove situation. Good companies tend not to trade for too long at the bottom of their range, unless there's a warning. If there's no warning, then the shares will pick up. So Mike's an extremely shrewd businessman. I mean, I can't honestly believe there's anything wrong here. I think it's probably just got a bit overlooked, Pete, frankly. So I would say this is probably a good buying opportunity, and history repeats itself. He sold Data Monitor to Informa back in 2010 for about 25 times EBITDA, and I don't know who the buyer for Global Data is, but it could be somebody like S&P, and they've got shed loads. They could easily pay a massive premium. So I would imagine he's on a journey to scale Global Data, and then flog it. He'll make another X billion. And shareholders will also do quite well. So, I'm on side with that idea. And if it pays a dividend, then in a way you're getting paid to just sit there anyway. So.
Yeah, you're getting a little dividend whilst you wait. If it floated Data Monitor at 120 million in 2000 and sold it in 2007-ish, 2008, 500, you know, so yeah, he knows what he knows his onions, most
You
definitely.
know what he did,
So.
when he bought Wigan, right? I mean, this is what we need in the UK. We need powerful local entrepreneurs. When he bought Wigan had had, Dave Whelan used to own Wigan, and then it got itself into a bit of a pickle, fell out the Premiership, all this sort of stuff, got into trouble with the Inland Revenue, blah, blah, blah. Debts were too high. Danson comes in, Inland Revenue, there's your money. Bank, there's your money. Paid off all the creditors. Club's now clean. I'm not saying they're going back to being a Premiership club again, but you want an owner like Mike Danson. And we need our entrepreneurs to reinvest their wealth in some of our franchises in the UK. And so I hope Global Data does succeed because I like Mike and I like people that support their communities.
Absolutely agree. Yeah, very good point. Well made there. Henry, Do you have a second stop for us, mate?
I
I'm
do.
just I'm not going to share any jokes. Just tell us what you've got.
It's a US firm, this one. It's a £6.4 billion market cap insurance business, which operates through three segments: general insurance, which is property and liability insurance, title insurance, and financial indemnity runoff. The business is called Old Republic International. The ticker is ORI, and it traces its beginnings all the way back to 1923, although several of their subsidiaries actually began operations even earlier than that, apparently. They are primarily a commercial lines underwriter, serving the insurance needs of a large number of organizations, including most of North America's FTSE 500. FTSE 500, the lost my train of
S&P.
thought now. S&P 500 businesses. Get my train of thought back. They effectively market, underwrite, and provide risk management services for businesses. There are lots of big conglomerates out there that do this sort of thing. But what interested me was this is one that people haven't necessarily heard of. After you mentioned, I think it was BP Marsh on a previous pod, I went away and I started having a look at the insurance sector. Partly because of the way you described it, but also my knowledge of Warren Buffett investing in it and making a fortune with GEICO. And ORI, Old Republic International, sort of caught my eye. It's on a PE of 10, which isn't particularly expensive. Pays a nice dividend of 3.5%, which is twice covered. That's forecast to continue growing through to the end of the year. Revenue is due to continue growing, and earnings are due to continue growing. They've been gradually buying back share count. It's got an A plus insurance credit rating from Standard and Poor's, so financially very robust, which is what you want to see from an insurer. And it's been in a solid uptrend. If you look at the price chart, it's been in a solid uptrend for 10 years, if you exclude the COVID crash. Now, that's quite a significant track record of returns for investors. It's currently near 52-week highs of $27 a share, nudging towards 28. And to be honest with you, I feel like that's a business that you could tuck away in your portfolio and it will continue to perform for many years to come. So one that, listeners might want to go and do a bit of research on. I'm not saying it's the best insurance business in the industry. It's just a name, but it's one I don't hear mentioned very often. And yeah, I think it's got a lot of attractive qualities about it.
I've never seen it mentioned, Henry. And you mentioned it's been around since 1923, which, given your tash, that's probably when that started as well. So it's celebrating its 100th year. So it's durable. It's been through all kinds of cycles, mate, and crashes and all the rest of it, and it's still sitting here today. So yeah, fantastic find once again, mate. I'm waiting to just go, but no, brilliant, good call. I love it's about having those sort of companies that are resilient. They've been there, seen it, done it. And this is the thing, what we're struggling with now. We're going back to some of the stocks we talked about earlier. You've got to have quality of management. It doesn't matter how good the tech is, doesn't matter how good the company is. If the management are poor, you've had it. You've absolutely had it.
It's all
So
about the leadership over management. If you've got
leadership
good
and
leaders in the
navigating and planning
business.
and looking forward. And planning and having a strategy for plan A, plan B, plan C. And I don't know, what's that famous, Buffett quote, invest in a company that could be run by fools because at some point it's going to be
One
run
day
by
it
a
will
fool or
be.
something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, these sort of companies for me that have shown the tech, have been through it and shown a test of time, absolutely spot on. No, great call. Is it one that you've heard of before, Alex? Given this
I've got to be
US
honest.
one?
I know the name, but I've got to be honest. I've never done any work on it, but I will do now. It certainly sounds as though it ticks a lot of boxes. So yeah.
Yeah, and if they're smart enough, they'll be coming over buying some of our insurance duds that we've got over here. You know what I mean? Or they'll be like, no, we don't need to go to the UK. Thank you very much. Our strategy's been working for 100 years. We don't need to go over there and buy. I'm conscious of the time, gents. I'm going to quickly mention this stock because I only saw this yesterday. It's not one I've researched, but I'm going to mention this because there was a podcast put out. It's very rare that, other than, when they do their thing in Omaha. it's linked to Buffett, this one, that Charlie Munger actually does full scale interviews. If he's not 99, he must be 100 already now. So, you know, this guy is just absolutely phenomenal. But he mentioned a stock called an American stock I mentioned, Henry. So I'm not trying to tread on your toes here, but I only saw it yesterday and he mentioned this, and it was Floor and Decor Holdings. Yeah. Ticker symbol, $FND. And essentially, as it says, that's what it does, floor and home decor. And essentially, this company is a £8.77 billion market cap company, PE of 32, of 30, no dividend. But year to date, it's up 17%, which isn't bad for a stodgy little flooring company and business. And 1 year, it's up 25%, which I think is quite good as well. But what he mentioned here, which piqued my interest, and I know lots of people love this company, and Algie Hall has mentioned that, Costco, and I think Phil Oakley has in the past, because they've got this supreme sort of subscription model going on, Costco. Yeah? FND have got a similar Costco model. Yeah? So people can go in, subscribe, pay, and then go in and do the shopping, get discount, wholesale sort of stuff. And so very, very briefly, I'm just going to say, keep an eye on that one. Do a bit of research on it. If you're looking for a bit of diversification away from UK stocks, a company that's been around for a little while could be interesting. FND on the US market, £8.77 billion company. It's not a tiddler. Could be worth a little bit of research. Anybody heard that of that one before? No?
Never.
It's the beauty of the US market, isn't it? We come up with these names which have got a market cap of 8 billion and we've scarcely heard of them. But they're profitable, they're doing well, they've got great moats, market
all
share.
I know is in the UK, we seem to have carpet and floor covering companies coming out our ears. We seem to have, if it's not an oil company or a bank or an insurer, then it's a floor covering company.
We've got a few of them. But I'm going to make one more comment, and then we'll get you guys to just round off here now. If you haven't already ordered your drinks for Bonfire Night, and you haven't made any plans regarding parties and celebrations for Christmas, and you're wanting some ales and beers, I suggest you visit Powder Monkey Brewing Co. At www.powdermonkeybrewing.com. And go and get some beers. And you can put a Twin Pete's code in there, just Twin Pete's, and you get 5% off all your beers. As I said previously, I think Henry has already bought some. I think his father-in-law's bought some. Other people have bought some and told me they've actually enjoyed them. I know Wheelie bought some a little while ago. So get your beers ordered in and get yourself 5% off.
I've also heard if you rub some of the beer on your tash, it helps thicken it. So, you know... extra perks for those that are growing a tash for November.
Anyone that's listening to that, it's like buying a ramp. Don't listen to what Henry just said. Don't take his advice. Do not do that. Do not do that. Alex, how would you like to finish off, mate?
Well, I'm not going to compete with Henry on the Movember front because let's be honest, who can compete with Henry? But I endorse everything he said at the start. We do ignore men's health. We do sort of forget that suicide is prevalent amongst younger male cohorts. And anything that brings attention to this horrible situation has got to be good, i.e. Movember. So for those of you that can grow a nice mooey, do it. But I can't, so I won't. Bit of bum fluff, but not a mooey.
No, very, very good, very good point. And to reiterate what you've just said there, Alex, I endorse what Henry has said as well. I think it's very important for us as men and women as well to just talk, not suppress, and just find someone you can trust who's not going to, you know, say anything that's going to make matters worse. You know, you want somebody emotionally that can just listen for a little while to you and just maybe signpost you to get some support and some help. And you're not alone. There's too many people that think they haven't got anyone to talk to. Lots of people out there have got lots of people to talk to. Just raise your hand and say, actually, I'm not, you know, instead of just saying, I'm okay, say, actually, you know what? Today, this week, last month, I'm not feeling great. And these are the reasons why. and you'll be amazed how many people come out and support you. So please, please, gents, ladies, just talk to somebody and not let matters just, you know, get worse. Henry, where do you want to close with this, mate?
Well, I echo the sentiments. Thank you again to everybody that's tuned in. There is one gentleman I'd like to give a shout out to, Stephen Kavanagh, who wrote to me on my blog, isn't on Twitter, but he wrote in to say that he enjoyed the show. He enjoyed our contributions. He enjoyed the ideas we were putting forward. And to be honest with you, it was a really, really lovely surprise. Really nice letter to get. I occasionally get people that write to me. It really put a smile on my face. It was really nice to be able to pass the feedback on to Peter and Alex. Really nice to receive it. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much for taking the time to write in.
Fantastic. Ladies and gents, thank you all for your feedback. Thank you all for your continued support. We're going to try and do something a little bit special, hopefully pre-Christmas for you all, depending on logistics and planning. But we'll see what we can do. Thank you all for your continued support. Thank you all for listening to this podcast. Stay safe. Do what you can in your communities. And as I always say, show some kindness and consideration to others. Until the next podcast, take care and God bless you all.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.